Hi, I'm Al Bergstein for KPTZ Radio in Port Townsend, Washington. I recently had the opportunity to interview two women who have returned from the Standing Rock Sioux protest camp just south of Bismarck, North Dakota. With me today are Cher DeWeese and the Reverend Florence Kaplow of the Quimper Unitarian Universal Fellowship, which is also known as QUUF. The two of them were witnesses to the events taking place at the camp. While many of us have been watching the events unfold on Facebook, these two women, along with a few other people from our area, were there in person and as such can help fill in the picture of what is happening and why. This interview was done on October 28th, and there were hundreds of people being arrested at the moment. The two of them will be giving a talk on their experience Sunday, November 6th at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary at QUUF. We thought we would interview them for those of you who can't make that event. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So where would we start? First of all, what did you see when you were back there, and why did you go? I guess that would be the good starting point. Why did the two of you decide to go?
Well, we're actually two of a larger delegation of six that went from Port Townsend and Whidbey Island. And I think it began for me, I've been involved with issues around treaty rights and indigenous rights, and also kind of the fossil fuel issues, for instance, Cherry Point and the Lummi Nation, for a while. And so I was following Standing Rock. I spoke about it at Quimper UU in late August, and I kept feeling that I needed to be there, that something extraordinarily significant was happening there. Although it didn't seem like it would be easy to take away time from being here to go there. And then I just decided I had to go. And it was fairly last minute. I put out the word, and in about 36 hours, five other people, four from this community, a minister from Whidbey Island, chose to drop everything they were doing in their lives and get on a train to North Dakota. And I'll let Cher say something about why she chose to do that.
I have been involved. I was involved as a volunteer at the Washington Correction Center for Women in the Native American program there for 4 years. And I had been watching Standing Rock and what was happening, kind of trying to figure out how I could go and what my husband would say if I just got in the car and started driving. But Florence gave a really wonderful sermon, and it just began to speak to me. And then I got an email from her on the morning of September 14th asking me if I'd like to come, which gave me about 30 hours to get ready and be on the train, and that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. So when you got there, what was your impressions?
Well, first of all, you have to go through a roadblock. You had, again, things are always changing there, but at the time that we got there, the National Guard had already been called out. So there was a roadblock on the main road heading to the camps. So we had to drive around. And then when we arrived at the Osheti Shakouin camp, which is, there are a number of encampments, but that's the largest one. That's the one where, if people have seen images of the flags of Indian nations that at this point I just heard, it's over 500 stretching on the other side of the road. We went to that encampment, which at the time we were there had 5,000 to 7,000 people camping. So you come down the hill and you're looking out over the Missouri River and the bottomlands of the river. It's beautiful prairie, wild prairie, landscape with teepees and tents and these flags, and you turn into the gates, and there are people at the gate who smudge your vehicle with sage. And
which
then,
we should let the listening audience know that that's a ceremonial type of thing that they do in the Native American.
So they're actually pure. The entire place is a place of prayer. Mm-hmm. And tradition. Mm-hmm. And so we camped at Osheti Shakouin for, we were there for about 4 days.
Okay. One thing that perhaps we could even take a step back on behalf of the listening audience and help people understand, why is Standing Rock, why now, why there, what is this event actually all about?
Well, for me, I think it started out when I went there. I thought it was about standing up for people that are, I mean, it's long overdue that we stood up for. Mm-hmm. They have kind of been pushed aside and trampled on for ever since this country was founded. And then when I got there, I thought, well, it's about the water. And I realized the more I was there, it wasn't about the water, although that is part of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's about all of us realizing that we're one people, mm-hmm. and that the only way that our planet is going to survive and that we're going to survive as a human species is if we join together and realize our oneness again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about laying down hurt, past hurts, you know, that, and I don't diminish it. Atrocities that have been committed against these people at all. Mm-hmm. But I think it's time we laid that down so that we can move forward, because I think only when we unite are we going to be able to stop what seems to be a corporate takeover of the nation and basically the world.
So as I understand it, what's going on there, from me sort of even stepping back one step above that, is that there's a pipeline that is wanting to be built or is in the process of being built to transport this Bakken crude that we see here, that's transported past us here in these trains that we see, hundreds of cars of trains. They're building a pipeline. I believe the company is Energy Transfer Partners or something like
yes,
that,
it is.
ETP. And they're building this pipeline from the Bakken crude fields up in Nebraska?
Northern North Dakota.
All the way down into Illinois, someplace in central Illinois, where I guess there's some refineries or something where they'll then break it out and send it to other places. So on one level, there's been this sort of, I mean, there's hundreds of pipelines all over the United States. There's been not a lot of controversy in the past, at any rate, over many of those. But this one in particular, because it is the Bakken crude, is being challenged by especially by the Standing Rock tribe. Because of why? I mean, what's different about this? They were going to run it, they got through, and then all of a sudden it seemed like this came out of the blue and they started protesting it. What was driving that?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to understand. One is that there was no consultation with the tribe prior to construction. And one of the things that I learned recently, which I think would come to us as a surprise to many listeners, is that oil pipelines do not fall under federal environmental impact regulations.
That's interesting.
That's really interesting. So it's done state by state.
I see.
And there was no consultation. And so actually originally the pipeline was going to cross the Missouri River near Bismarck.
I see.
And the people of Bismarck said, we don't want that. That's going to affect our water. So they moved it to just north of the, and just upstream of the Standing Rock Reservation, through important cultural sites, grave sites, the crossing of the river there. It's actually not a river at that point. It's a reservoir. Mm-hmm. The tribe had already lost a lot of their traditional lands when the reservoir was built. It's several miles wide and four different crossings there. It's their only source of drinking water.
Oh, my.
And so for all those reasons, but I think there's a deeper reason, which we heard about when we were there. Some people may have heard this pipeline referred to as the Black Snake. We heard some traditional people speaking who talked about a Dakota prophecy that says that when the Black Snake crosses their land, it is the beginning of the end of the world. And not just their world, our world. And that's the reason that from the very beginning, they've said, this isn't just about us. As Cher was saying, this is about all of us. And that's why they are willing to do anything. They are willing to put their bodies on the line, risk arrest, even risk being killed, in order to keep the Black Snake from crossing their land.
Got it. So they decided then, when they found out that they had changed the route and were moving the route south of Bismarck and going to do a river crossing at the point of where that's a reservoir there, And so, because there's a dam on the river and the river's been backed up, which I understand was actually backed up in the 60s over their land, and
that's
and
right.
they were forced to move at that point as well,
yeah.
on behalf of all of the people who benefited from that dam being put in.
Right.
Yes.
And so there, when they found that out, they then took the protest to officials in the state government and got turned down?
Yes, they did that. And then they had they also had some youth that ran from the Standing Rock Nation to Washington, D.C., trying to get Obama to recognize them. And I don't think he's still done that, mm-hmm. Which I think is a shame.
Right.
And I think something else that's important to understand is not only is this the water for the Standing Rock, this is a water source for 18 million people downstream.
Right, absolutely.
And it's a huge, it's not like a little trickle of water, you know. It is a major, major source of water.
Yeah, and some of us may know and have heard about, there's been a number of pipeline failures, especially in the last couple of years, recently. I know there's been failures over the years, but there's been failures along the Yellowstone River and also down in Arizona. There was a river down there. I can't remember the name of that river, and that was also a drinking water river for a specific tribe down
Navajo.
In Arizona, the Navajo,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there has just been a leak in North Dakota as of Monday onto some farmer's land, and it's polluted his water. He can't feed his livestock, and they figure there's been about 55,000 barrels of oil has just spilled out all over into the land.
I think what a lot of people don't realize, too, is the size of this pipeline. So if it's built, it will carry half of the daily production of the Bakken oil fields, which is about 500,000 barrels a day.
That seems like that would be on the scale of the other pipeline.
It's Keystone XL.
Keystone
Absolutely.
XL.
This is Keystone. The only reason that Keystone got the kind of attention it did and had a federal nexus was because it was crossing into Canada.
Right.
Or crossing from Canada.
I see.
And but yes, this is of that scale.
And there are many people, including myself, who are very concerned that this may be the link that connects the Keystone, what they have done on the Keystone XL pipeline. Because if you, it doesn't take too much to connect the dots.
Right.
And take that all the way to the Gulf, which was their original intent.
Right, right.
So it's kind of like, for me, it's like Keystone with lipstick on.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I know that I went over to Glacier to go cross-country skiing, Glacier National Park, in the winter. And what I found was we took the train over, and that was very educational. I mean, people may not be aware of the immense amount of train traffic that is actually happening. We see some of it here that's going along the shorelines here on the east side of the Sound. But what I saw there was that our trains were significantly delayed in Spokane, and that when we got to Glacier, there was huge amounts of trains, cars by the hundreds going by all day and all manners of day and night, and we were significantly late getting in, by hours and hours and hours getting in because of the trains. And our trains going back to Spokane was delayed by hours and hours and hours. We actually didn't get on the train. We were supposed to get on the train, I think, at 7 at night, and we got on the train at 2 in the morning. And that's all because of the Bakken crude trains that are coming this way and the empty cars coming back.
Do you want to describe what we saw in Northern
Dakota? Yeah, I do. I think it's really important for people to know. The whole trip was a real eye-opener for me. I always thought that I knew a lot about what was going on, and I found out I didn't know but a drop of what's going on. And when we were on the train during the night, we got into northern Montana, and it looks like Dante's Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
There are fracking wells burning everywhere.
Hmm.
I think if people could go and see that, they would finally get what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
There, across the United States now, there are between oil wells and fracking wells, there are 1.7 million Mm-hmm. It's also not only threatening the Missouri River, it's threatening what's called the Ogallala Aquifer, mm-hmm. which is the water source for almost two-thirds of the United States.
Oh my gosh, that's
And the
huge.
Fracking wells are right up to the very edge. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's also really important, it's not just the wells, but the amount of water. It takes between 1 and 7 million gallons of water
right.
to drill every single well.
Right.
When you think about that times 1.7 million, that's a heck of a lot of water. And every fracking well can be fracked up to 18 times before it's considered a dead well, mm-hmm. taking 1 to 7 million gallons every time.
And the other thing you see, the reason that we were seeing these, again, as she said, it looks like Dante's Inferno. Everywhere you look, you see these flames. And it's astonishing. They're burning off the natural gas
right. yeah.
because of their oil wells. And right. the natural gas is actually considered a waste product.
Right.
And so here we are in a situation where literally something that is a valuable fuel is just being burned off.
Right.
I mean, the methane being released in those from those wells is mind-boggling. So that was, I think, for all of us, seeing that was a real shock.
So what else did you see at the camp? Go ahead and mm-hmm. describe more about the camp itself and the people that you met.
Well, I think one thing that's also very important for people to know, because you don't necessarily, depending on what news sources you rely on, you might not realize this. One of the things that I was most struck by at the camp was an absolute commitment to nonviolence. And I think to nonviolence, to traditional elders being really the people who are guiding what's happening there, especially women.
Mm-hmm.
And so over and over, we see these news releases from the local police saying that these are violent protests. And in fact, the very first national attention to Standing Rock said, the protests have turned violent.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the dogs were,
mm-hmm, right.
the attack dogs were used. And then when you actually look at the video from the events, the violence is all on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is really a travesty of justice that's mm-hmm. happening right now. The degree of violence being perpetrated against completely nonviolent, and they are not protesters, and they're very clear about this, they're water protectors.
Mm-hmm.
And they are standing in the middle of the road with their horses and praying,
mm-hmm.
and being maced, being beaten. The horses were shot at yesterday after they brought a herd of buffalo in.
Oh.
And so I think that one of the things that I have really become focused on is writing to the Justice Department, to the Obama administration, about doing something around the state-sponsored violence that's going on right now there, which is really horrifying.
It is.
Have you both contacted Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell and Derek Kilmer about this as well?
Yes, I have.
And I have written to all of the, there's a whole list of, I really think actually at this point, it's up to the federal government, which has, I will say, done its part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the first court ruled against the Standing Rock Sioux, immediately afterwards, the Obama administration released a request to the company to cease construction within 20 miles of the river.
Mm-hmm.
They did not.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, much of the blockades, attempted blockades of the pipeline construction that we've seen over the last few weeks have happened within that 20-mile zone that was specifically requested by the administration. It's extraordinary. They're just completely overriding a request from the U.S. government to cease construction until the tribe could be properly included.
And I think it's important for people to know, too, that this company is, they have a headquarters in Texas, but they are a Canadian company.
Mm.
And so they feel like they don't have to abide by the rules or the requests. And I do, you know, I think it was good that Obama did make a request to them, but I think it needs to be a demand, because mm-hmm. they're not listening at all. They're just continuing to move and push.
The 85% of the pipeline has been built at this point. Mm-hmm. The only thing stopping them from crossing the Missouri River is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which unfortunately is not known for its respect for treaty rights, mm-hmm. shall we say. Although they did actually make the first time they had ever considered Native American treaty rights was their decision against Cherry Point that mm-hmm. just happened last year. So there's hope.
I read in the on one online journal that was saying that Donald Trump actually has significant investments in ETP. That came out, I think, yesterday.
Yes, he does.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people have significant. Wells Fargo, many sure. of the largest banks. This is a big project. I mean, that's one of the kind of shocking things, is that it almost got completely built under the radar, mm-hmm. this massive project. And really, if it wasn't for the Standing Rock Sioux and mm-hmm. David Archambault, who's the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux, I think this would be a done deal. It would have already happened.
So the campment itself, where you were, that's on sort of land that's friendly land, if you would say?
It's part of the Corps.
It's part of the Corps.
Yes, okay. And they have allowed that. There's a camp on private land, basically at the edge of the reservation. Mm-hmm. There's the very large encampment that's on U.S. Army Corps of Engineers land. And then what I think people may have seen video from an encampment that is, I mean, they are deliberately practicing civil disobedience
right.
on the pipeline route itself.
Right. Being done on what they consider their land mm-hmm. because of that. I think the treaty was in 1851. Mm-hmm. But they are trying to claim eminent domain,
right.
which has been done to them.
Right.
And that's why they don't feel like they're trespassing.
That's right. They consider it unceded land under their treaties. And I think one thing that is also really significant, and that felt really significant for us being there, is that there has never been a gathering of indigenous nations of this size mm-hmm. ever. And what many all day long there were traditional speakers from the Hopi, from the Apache, from Venezuela, from all over
mm-hmm. Palestine
mm-hmm. And what they would say over and over again is, we are coming together mm-hmm. and we are waking up and we will not go back to sleep again. And mm-hmm. I think you can look out at what's happening around the world, and in many ways, indigenous people are entering a time of resurgence and renaissance and leadership mm-hmm. As a moral force in mm-hmm. this country.
Yeah.
And you really feel that there, that mm-hmm. something, yeah, you know, all these delegations would come in and each one would speak about what they were facing mm-hmm. in their community. And it's the same story everywhere.
So on a daily basis, did they have like educational workshops going on? What was happening? How many days were you there in total?
We were there almost 4 days, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, there was nonviolent direct active training. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were new to the camp, you haven't had training, you are encouraged to go and get mm-hmm. training, because I guess that the one thing, if I could say anything, is that it's probably the most peaceful place I've ever been in my life. You know, I'd love to go back there. I keep thinking about that, so I don't know what's going to happen, but it's just peaceful. And when you drive in, there's this huge banner. It says, "We are peaceful." Mm-hmm. And they were. And, you know, it just, people are allowed to voice, you know, what they need to say. And this kind of council fire burns day and night. And there's just constant prayer. It's amazing. I wish everyone could go there, because I think if everyone could go there, they would get it.
And there are elders speaking all the time,
mm-hmm.
and some of the most revered elders in Indian country,
mm-hmm.
people who are direct descendants of Crazy Horse, direct descendants of Red Cloud, pipe bearers from across the plains.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the week before we were there, when the decision was made, there were 200 pipe bearers
mm-hmm.
in the camp praying for a successful resolution. And,
mm-hmm.
and that was the day that the Obama administration did what it did. So that was, when you're there, everything's outside,
mm-hmm.
really. But there are teachings happening really day and night.
Yeah. I think one thing that's important for people to understand, too, is this is not a cushy setting. I mean, we're in tents, people are in teepees, all the cooking is done on open fires. There's not stoves and, you know, lanterns and flush toilets. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a huge undertaking when you're talking about 7,000 to 10,000 people.
That's true. Florence, you mentioned the pipe bearers. Perhaps it's something to help people understand what the pipe bearers are and what the pipes mean to the tribes.
You know, I don't feel that I can really speak to that. I
mm-hmm.
just know that among the Plains tribes, there are sacred pipes that have been handed down
mm-hmm.
for generations that are, for instance, the one that is most famous is the one held by Arvo Looking Horse, and it is the white buffalo calf woman pipe that is the most sacred object.
Mm-hmm.
For the Sioux nations.
Mm-hmm.
And he came there. And that pipe is very, very seldom taken out in public. Many of these pipes are, they're hidden.
Mm-hmm.
They're considered so sacred that they're very seldom shown. And that's why, in some ways, this was so significant, because they were being brought out as a powerful source of peace and prayer. Do you want to say anything more? Is it...
I don't know what to say. I mean, I know I, having been, you know, a little bit involved in the Lakota teachings, it's very sacred, very, very sacred. And it's not something, like Florence said, you don't do it on a daily basis. It's something huge is happening. And if they bring out the white buffalo calf woman's sacred pipe, it's enormous.
And also, just to say, you know, there has been an incredible outpouring of support from Pacific Northwest tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the Canoe Nations
mm-hmm.
that one of our group that went, Dennis Reynolds, part of the reason he went is he saw the video of the canoe journey families
mm-hmm.
going to North Dakota. And he thought, oh, my goodness, if these people are going,
mm-hmm.
I need to go.
Yeah.
And that's happened. The Lummi Nation took, the fishermen gave up their catch
mm-hmm.
to take fish to, and that's happening all over the country. But there's a strong level of involvement from the Pacific Northwest.
So what are you looking to do here locally? Is it an educational outreach, or are you looking to ask people to go back there? What's going to be going on in the near future?
So there's a lot of organization going on locally, and there's quite an extraordinary Facebook page that, and of course that's where a lot of the information comes from, organized by a local woman here in Port Townsend. It's Pacific Northwest Standing Rock Support. And in addition, there's groups that have been meeting. There's a meeting tonight at Rosewind to organize support, help support people who want to go. As usual, Port Townsend is getting itself organized. And of course, we've had already, we had a prayer vigil, there have been rallies, and I think those activities will continue, although it really feels like it's getting really crucial. I think this is the time, if people have been following this from a distance, this is the time that you get on the phone, you write to your representatives, you write to the White House, and if people can go, this is the time to go, not later.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for coming out today and taking the time to help us understand what has been happening back at the Standing Rock protest site.
Thank you.
This has been an interview with Cher DeWeese and the Reverend Florence Kaplow of the Quimper Unitarian Universal Fellowship. These women and others who went back to North Dakota will be presenting a talk on the trip Sunday, November 6th at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary at QUUF here in Port Townsend. I'm Al Bergstein for KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington.